Marion Kern Kennedy is being interviewed as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League San Antonio, Texas unit at San Antonio on October 21st, 2003. Ruth Stewart is interviewing, assisted by Carol Hapgood. Marion, tell us about your joining the Army Nurse Corps.
I joined the Army Nurse Corps at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania because the hospital was preparing the personnel to fill a general hospital unit. And they were, of course, asking a lot of people in my age group to join. I was one of them, and I agreed to join.
And so that settled where you were going and the next few years of your life.
And who I was going to go with. Now, at that time, when you joined the Army, you first of all joined the Red Cross. They were at that time the official recruiting agency for the Army Nurse Corps.
And you had just graduated, had you, from the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm.
So you were a part of that system there.
Yes.
And they gathered physicians and nurses.
Yes.
Okay. What rank were you when you joined?
I was one of over 100 second lieutenants.
No bosses?
Yes. We had not very many, though, considering the number of second lieutenants. But then we were all professional nurses, and they knew that while our experience as graduates had been limited, we'd had a lot of experience as students.
What was it like for you in the early days in the Army unit? How long were you in the United States before you went overseas?
We went to Camp Claiborne in Louisiana in the middle of May of 1942. And we were there until the 5th of January of 1943. And we had some classes and some lectures on various military subjects, and what I remember particularly is gas mask drill and the rest of our training was by practical experience on the wards at the hospital at Camp Claiborne.
And you were there how long?
From the middle of May until early January. 7.5 months.
What was your life like during those early days in this change in your life?
Well, we lived in a cantonment type building, and two nurses to a room. And most of the time we were on day duty. And during the day we worked 7 to 7. And when we were on night duty, we again worked from 7 at night until 7 in the morning. And it was routine nursing procedures, but learning the Army method of taking care of patients and learning how to use Army forms for a patient's chart. And indeed, that was one of the first places that I had come into contact with what was then called the unit system of nursing, which was worked out very well for us. And we also used it over in India.
And in those early days, was it difficult for you to adjust to military life?
I don't think it was particularly difficult. You know, when you're with 100 of your friends, it all started out a bit as a lark. You know, we left Philadelphia on a private train for just a train just for our unit. And we traveled in a Pullman. And it was a very interesting two-day trip across part of the United States I had never seen before. And when I was growing up, people did not travel as widely as they do now. And so it was sort of a new and exciting trip. And of course, Louisiana was totally different from Eastern Pennsylvania and the city of Philadelphia. So that it was quite interesting.
And then what?
Well, from Louisiana, of course, we went overseas. We went to California by train and then got on a troop ship with several thousand other people and traveled on that to India. And since it was during wartime, and when we left California, we had our ship was traveling alone, which meant that they zigzagged down the Pacific so that they would not attract the attention of a submarine. And we had two meals a day. We had breakfast, and then again we had dinner. And of course the food was either dehydrated or powdered, and then was reconstituted for the meals. And we didn't have much work to do, so we played a lot of bridge and had limited reading material. Each one of us had brought a book and a couple of magazines with us. So we read those and exchanged them and gave them away, things like that. And we were not permitted to have a radio. We were not permitted to have a camera. We were not permitted to keep a diary. And between reading and bridge and talking, we managed to pass the time.
And how long were you on the ship?
It was a little over 40 days, from the 20th of January until the 4th or 5th of March.
And then you landed in India?
We landed in Bombay.
And from there, how was your professional and personal life in India?
Well, my personal life, when we landed in Bombay, they didn't quite know what to do with us, so they sent us to an English rest camp called Pune. And there they cleared out a couple of hospital wards in the British hospital, and we stayed in those wards for a week or 10 days. I can't remember. Anyway, we had a great time in Pune. It so happens that the week we arrived, they were trying to have some social activities in Pune to raise money for the British Red Cross. So we went to quite a few social occasions, met some very nice British people and men, and had really a very relaxing week or 10 days, and it was just good to be on Earth instead of on a ship that was rolling across it. And so we were there until we started up to the northeastern part of India, which is where Assam is located, in the foothills of the Himalayas. And when we got up there, it was quite a bit different than being in Pune. When we arrived in the rain, and it really rained, and they had cleared the jungle to make room for some of the buildings that we had, and it was muddy. There were no sidewalks, no means of paving anything. And the area that we took over had been established as a hospital. Every ward was a separate building. And the only buildings that had a cement floor were the operating room, the x-ray, and the dental clinic. All the others were just on the cleared ground was the floor. And the walls of all the buildings were the woven bamboo matting, so that they could easily construct a building in a day. They'd bring in a group of native laborers, and they would clear the jungle and strip the bamboo and sit down on the ground and weave the matting, and then use the bamboo poles for the framework of the building, and then cut off the tops of some palm trees, and that was the roof. So inside of a day, a building was built, and that evening, the supply people would bring the cots and set them up, and the other basic supplies for a ward, and so overnight, you'd have a new ward of patients. But it was very practical.
And how did you function in nursing in that respect, having come from the stateside hospital with modern equipment?
Well, we improvised, and we did the best we could. You know, if you're going to take temperatures or pass out medications, those are basic procedures that you can do in any environment if necessary. And so we managed. We used the first couple days we were there, we used the helmet liner for a basin to wash our hands and whatnot. There was no running water. The water came with the paniwala, with a bucket, you know, and in each hand. And in order to use it, it was rather muddy. And we could use it for certain things, but if you were going to give medications or anything like that, we of course had to get water out of the blister bag, because that was the water that had been purified and had been strained. And the preventive medicine team that prepared the water some days had a hard time keeping up with the demand.
But that was a system that was built into your unit?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did you live personally, you and the 99 other second lieutenant nurses?
Well, there were about, I think close to 30. We had a building much like a hospital ward, size of a hospital ward, and we had the Indian beds called charpoys. There are 15 down each side of the building, And of course, we had come with our bedroll, and we each came overseas with one suitcase and a bedroll and a musette bag. And that's, we lived out of our musette bags and our suitcases. The bedroll we put on the bottom of the charpoy because the only thing on the charpoy was hemp was woven as to hold a mattress of sorts, and at first we didn't have a mattress. And then the shelter half we put up above, we slept under mosquito bars, and we put the shelter half up above our beds because as the palm leaves, which were the ceiling, dried out, little bugs would drop down. And if you didn't want falling on you, have your shelter half strung up above your bed.
And how was the food?
Oh, the food, it was pretty bad. The first 6 months we were there, though, we had one thing in our favor. We were on British rations. And one of the rations that the British got that they really didn't like very much, and they'd give it to you, or you could exchange, were Campbell's baked beans. How in the world they got such a supply of Campbell baked beans, I don't know. But British supply had them. And we got an occasional fresh egg. But a fresh egg there was not like a fresh egg here. It was more like a pullet egg, small and rather strong flavored. But after about 6 months, we went off of the British rations and onto American rations. And when we did, we no longer got the Campbell's baked beans, nor did we get the pullet eggs. So I sort of missed the
Do you know why you were on British rations to begin with?
Well, that area was largely supplied by the British. The Americans were just beginning to move into it.
And that was what year?
1943, the spring of 43. And of course, they were bringing over road building materials, equipment and whatnot, because the primary purpose for our being there was that they were trying to build a road from India to connect with the old Burma Silk Road. The Japanese had cut the road, and they wanted to send supplies to China by the back door.
That was the mission then?
That was the mission. They were trying to keep Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese interested in fighting the Japanese so that there would not be any additional pressure on the South Pacific.
What were the type of patients that you were caring for?
The first 6 to 8 or 9 months, they were mainly malaria patients and a few with dengue fever. But in the fall, a preventive medicine team came in to take care of the whole area, the base area, do some preventive measures. They drained the ditches on the side of the road, also poured oil on them. They cut down some excess weeds that were around the roads and around the quarters. They issued some instructions about dress. After about 6 or 8 months, we could not go out after dark unless we had on slacks and wore our slacks tucked into socks and wore a long sleeve blouse. Also, right around that fall, later that fall, Adabrin had been developed, and we started to get Adabrin, and everyone in the area had to take one Adabrin tablet a day as a malaria preventive. And it did, all these measures combined really worked very well, because in October, November, we started to get casualties from the fighting in Burma. And so our hospital gradually changed from being largely medical to being mainly surgical patients.
Could you tell us more about the experiences there that were especially memorable to you there in the Indian base?
Well, I think one of the things that I remember particularly is the American GI makes a wonderful patient. They really are. On the whole, you know, non-complaining. They were not feeling well. We'd ask them, when they had malaria, we'd ask them to drink fluids, and all we had was this horrible tasting water. And later on, we might have had some lukewarm tea, but we didn't have any ice. And when you have a fever, you know, nothing revives one better than something ice cold to drink, and we didn't have that. Later on, we did get a lot of canned grapefruit juice and things like that. But they had to eat the same food we did, and as I say, occasionally hot coffee, but as I said, after a while we got better beds for them. And the charpoys, if you've ever seen a picture of them, or rather, they're like a low cot, and they were it was very wearing to bend over so far, so much. So as soon as they could, they did get in some hospital beds with a thin straw mattress. And those men never said a word about their sparse accommodations. Once again, just like being on board ship, we more or less provided our own recreation quite a lot. There was no public transportation where we were. If you could get a date with a young man who had transportation, I want to tell you, he was very popular, because there, every once in a while you just wanted to leave the compound, and no place to walk really, because the road was muddy and the trucks were going up and down the road. splashing mud. There were a very nice group of English tea planters around us, and when possible, they would provide a movie for us at the Tea Planters Club. We were there about a year when we got an outdoor movie place where they'd show movies at night. The first movie we saw there was the same movie that had been the last movie we saw in Louisiana. It was Holiday Inn with Bing Crosby. And I enjoyed it just as much the second time as I did the first time. Mm-hmm. So,
when you had a date with a young man with four wheels, where would you go?
We would go, where did we go? We'd go down to the Tea Planters Club. I had met a young lady from New York State who was a graduate of Bryn Mawr College, which as you know is near Philadelphia, and had married a Scot who was an engineer about 15 miles away from where we were was a large oil refinery. Burma Shell had a lot of oil wells in northern Burma, and that oil was piped back to Digboy to the oil refinery. And her husband was the engineer in charge of the oil refinery. So I met Emma, and so I would go down to see her about once a month. And she told me a lot about her life in India, which was very nice, except it was more or less isolated. And we'd sometimes drive down to a tea plantation, and you could the tea plantations were really beautiful. They were so green, and the tea leaves were picked by hand, and so that it always looked like just a very lovely row after row of green hedge. And we could walk down there.
How did you keep in contact with your family and friends at home?
Through the mail. We had United States mail, of course. When we first went over there, mail was about excuse me, 2 months old when we got it. But gradually, if you remember, the mail, which was, you wrote something and then it was filmed, and the film went to the States, and then it was reprinted and sent to your family. And then through the years, probably about the second year we were there, we started to get some airmail. And then that would reach us in 7 to 10 days.
And your friends there in the camp with you, did you maintain close contact with the same group that you had gone overseas with?
Oh yes, because we all were living in this same compound.
And that was a support system then?
Yes.
For all of you, mm-hmm. In that way. Did you receive medals or citations during that time?
No, I didn't. None of us did.
Okay. What pressures did you feel more than what you've described as?
I think the climate in the summertime was a little difficult because you were, it was hot and you did sweat a lot. There's no other word for it. There's no polite word. It was sweat.
Were there any special humorous or funny kind of situations that you remember from that time?
Well, you know, when we first went over, we had slit trenches. And it takes a certain amount of agility. And more than one wallet was lost in a slit trench. That was one thing that always struck us as funny. We had one young man who worked in the dental clinic. And he met this one nurse that I knew from, and he was very, very shy about asking her anything. But every time we went to the mess hall, or we went on duty, or we came off duty, we had to walk past the dental clinic. And he always managed to be out there when Fran was walking by. And she was trying to discourage him. And he would not be discouraged. So we always looked to see if, I can't even remember his name now.
So
but anyway, she later married him. After World War II, okay. He looked her up at home, and they started to go out together, and she married him.
Persistent Page.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you there in the CBI?
We arrived there in March, and I left in June.
Just
so a little, 2 years and 3 months.
Okay. And where did you go from there?
From there, I came back to the United States, and I went to Valley Forge General Hospital in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
And did you remain then in the service?
No,
continuously?
No. I was discharged effective the 1st of January of 1946.
And from there, what did you do after you?
Well, from there, I went home for a little over a year, I think, I was at home.
At that point, then, you did go back into the service, right?
I went back in the service in 1953. Towards the end of the Korean War.
And that was the Army Nurse Corps again?
That was the Army Nurse Corps.
And how long were you in at that point?
Trying to think. Approximately 18 years, mm-hmm, after that, because I had a total 22 years and 9 months of active federal service.
Down pat.
That much I've memorized.
Okay. Do you remember the day that your service ended? Was that a memorable day that you...
After India?
Uh-huh.
No, I was at home. Mm-hmm. See, we had what was called terminal leave because we hadn't had any leave while we were in India. So when I came back to the United States, after I had several months at Valley Forge, I was sent on what was called terminal leave. So that was...
The friends that you made while you or had went to India with, did you maintain contact with them after that, since then? Are any of them still in contact?
Oh, yes, quite a few of them. We've had several reunions of the unit, and then there are... some nurses here that were in India when I was in India.
Did you join any veterans organizations?
Yes, I joined the Women's Overseas Service League. I joined the China Burma India Veterans Association. And I guess that's it.
Did the experience that you had during this long period, did that influence the way you look at or think about war or the military at this point?
Well, I wish that all the countries of the world could find some other way of settling a dispute rather than war. I think the war is a big waste, and I don't like to see people or things wasted, and surely there must be a better way of doing things. But until you get everyone in the world to agree, it's not going to be.
Well, thank you very much, Marian, for this interview.